Midlands Today with O'Brien's Renault Mullingar. The all-new Renault Arkana, hybrid by nature. Call to O'Brien's Renault Lynn Road today. When people in the Midlands want to talk, they talk to Will Faulkner.
Good morning. How are you doing today? Do you know it's 9 months exactly since Russia began its invasion of Ukraine? How different the world is now. How more expensive the world is now. Have we any good news? I have a little bit of good news in a minute. When you call 0818 300 103 is my number. You can text or you can WhatsApp, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore on 083 30 10 103. Main stories on the newspapers this morning. Irish Times tells you how doctors shunned members of the cervical cancer check group. These are the so-called 221 plus group. The women affected by the controversy. And in his latest report, his final progress report on the controversy, Dr. Gabriel Scally said it was completely unacceptable that doctors would refuse to treat these women because they were members of that support group who wanted greater patient disclosure. The medical profession turned on them again, in other words, not once, but twice. Very, very sad. The other story there on the front of the Irish Times is a warning from an expert group to government that while there may be positive attitudes to Ukrainian refugees and indeed refugees in general here in Ireland, that will change if there is competition for housing between those from other countries and those who have been on lists here. It's an obvious one. It was always going to happen and is no doubt part of the plan at the Kremlin, to create these tensions in Europe. So the report recommends that Ireland urgently builds 6 reception centres on state-owned land between now and the end of next year. And this emergency accommodation will help to find a roof over the head of refugees while not creating competition for housing, or at least dampening down that competition. That's on the front of the Irish Times. Coverage continues on the tabloids of the Jerry the Monk Hutch trial. The main thing is we stay alive. A quote, again from a bugged phone call. The trial heard how Jerry Hutch looked for a ceasefire in the feud between his gang and the Keenahans, or so it is alleged. The Irish Independent. Stop blocking new housing. Micheál Martin's message to NIMBY objectors, not in my backyard objectors. And he is urging them to consider the plight of others. Now, he was speaking in private, but as always, if you're the Taoiseach of the country, when you speak in private, somebody leaks it in public. So he was addressing Fianna Fáil councillors. He spoke of the impact of the housing crisis, particularly on people under the age of 40 who do not own their own homes and are finding it very difficult to buy a house. And he said, before deciding to oppose new buildings in your community, if you own your own home, you should think about those who do not have one. Well, we have a planning system. It is your right to object. One of the bizarre features of it is you don't even have to live in the area. You could be here in the Midlands and object to a housing project in Donegal or Kerry, which is unusual, but hey, as an Irish citizen, that's your right. Cervical check campaigners treated like lepers. That's the headline on the Irish Examiner, while the Irish Daily Mail tells us hotels putting up refugees are owed millions of euro. So the department seems to be very slow to make the payments. And I'm just wondering if you've rented accommodation under the relevant scheme. What is it, €400 per month, whatever the amount is. Have you received payment? Is it just the big operators who have yet to get the cash in the bank? Or is everybody in the same boat? Anyway, that's what's on the front pages. What is inside? I think this is a little misleading in the Irish Times. It says households could lose out on extra cost of living benefits as windfall energy tax may already have been used. So in a memo to ministers, the civil servants tell them that there remains flexibility in how the proceeds can be spent, and it may be decided to use the proceeds to offset the costs of supports which are already being provided. In other words, that while this tax has just been agreed, it would be used to offset the energy credit you've already received. To be fair, Leo Varadkar has said one of the advantages of this windfall tax is that we have additional resources that we didn't have on budget day. That implies they are going to distribute it. It wasn't in the sums back in September. Hopefully not, anyway. Good news. A notorious burglary gang has been apprehended and hauled before the courts. So what happened, and this is a strange name, the Cockwall burglary gang based in Talla had been using the motorway network to prey on rural homes. And in particular, they were targeting Chinese restaurants, the owners of Chinese restaurants who would be bringing home the proceeds. And in this case, they went to Carlow and to the Willows specifically on the 19th of December 2019, four in the car. They got a high-powered car to make their escape. They managed only to collect €200 in coins and a pair of runners at the house. But the Gorthy had been watching them. They monitored as they switched number plates as the car. They tried to cover their tracks, etc., etc. Anyway, Gorthy swooped in and made the arrests. For the record, Edward Wall, 31, of Newtown Park in Talla. His cousin Patrick Wall, 22, of Fortunestown Lane, also in Talla, and two other gentlemen. The two other gentlemen will be sentenced next year. Edward Wall, the older of them, will be jailed for 5.5 years. But his cousin Patrick, this is where it gets interesting, his cousin Patrick had never been before the courts before. He had no previous convictions. And he obviously was younger. He was 22 years of age. So the judge imposed a sentence on him, a 2.5 year sentence. But he suspended it in full. Now, he said he may be criticised in the higher courts if the DPP were to appeal this, but he said it was a risk he was prepared to take. The probation service considered he had a low risk of reoffending. The judge felt he was under the influence of older criminalised relatives. And he did warn him if ever he came before the courts again, that sentence would be reactivated. Maybe he is giving him the benefit of the doubt. Presumably he's going back up to Talla. There are, by the way, apparently 70 members of this Cockwall criminal gang. So he will no doubt come into contact with them. Will they influence him one more time? Anyway, you can debate the judge's decision yourself. The Super League and its failure is the catalyst for the sale of Manchester United. So writes Sam Wallace in the Irish Independent this morning. And the Glazers never really had a plan for Man United in the post-Alex Ferguson years, he says. So when this idea of a Super League, which would be the NFL, in effect, here in Europe, when that idea was floated, the Glazers jumped at it. But it didn't go anywhere. And now the club is in debt. Old Trafford needs to be refurbished. Some would even say replaced, rebuilt. And there aren't too many prospective owners lurking about. Liverpool is already for sale, for instance. So, if the club is to be bought for nearly €7 billion, you're looking at another 1.5 to 2 billion euro for Old Trafford and for training grounds. So the scale of the investment is enormous. Who would be a good new owner? Well, maybe the people who run McDonald's, because the Irish Independent also looks at the franchisees around the country who have made small fortunes. There are 22 franchisees controlling all but two of the 95 McDonald's outlets in the country. So most of them have a couple of restaurants each. And take Amir Asfar, for instance. He emigrated from Iran 20 years ago. He owns 12 McDonald's outlets, including the one on Grafton Street, which opened back in 1977. It is one of the busiest outlets in the country. Personally, it's the very first McDonald's I ever went into. But his company made a profit of 3.1 million euro in 2020. Now, recall 2020. Going for fast food was not exactly easy when non-essential retailers were closed. So all of them, all of these franchisees seem to be doing incredibly well. McDonald's truly is a gold mine. All right, one or two other stories for you very quickly. The sad news that the solicitor Richard Grogan has died. If you're on TikTok, you no doubt will have seen his videos. If you're not on TikTok, he has appeared on television. He appeared on this program many, many times. A very, very competent HR solicitor. He really specialised in employment law. But why many admired Richard is that he didn't just keep all of that knowledge to himself for his own financial gain. He shared it. He educated people. And unfortunately, he had a short illness. Managed to live long enough to see him named Solicitor of the Year by the Law Society, but his death was announced yesterday, and his family posted on his Twitter account a lovely tribute in which they said it was a genuine passion of his to educate while having fun in a way that only he could. He will be sorely missed by all. That's the law, and that's a fact. Now, a final one for you. Love Actually. It's nearly like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory these days. It's becoming a Christmas essential. Whenever December rolls around, Love Actually comes on the telly. And it is 20 years since Hugh Grant and Laura Linney and Bill Nighy and Emma Thompson and all of the crew got together first. And so it has been announced that a one-hour show will reunite the stars two decades later. And it's not going to be a follow-on. It's going to be a sit-down with the cast looking at the making of the movie, some of the stories involved. And it's going to be screened on the US channel ABC and hopefully will be available here in due course. Not ashamed to admit it, for all that you will slag me, Love Actually, one of my favourite movies of all time. It's very cleverly written. Here in Ireland, since the crisis in Ukraine began, communities have, generally speaking, absolutely rallied to help the people of Ukraine. Whether it was the collections and the truckload upon truckload upon truckload of supplies that made its way from here to Ukraine, or at least to the borders in Poland, to the many people who have been welcomed into towns and villages and rural areas here in the Midlands and beyond as they try to rebuild their lives. But that positivity is at risk, says a new report which has been given to government and advises that if the housing crisis is not addressed and if there is competition for housing between refugees and people already on the list here in Ireland, then there is a risk of racial tension. Now, it's a long report, so I'll just quote from some of it. It says, "The protracted housing crisis provides a basis for racist tension and confrontation. There are indications of a reluctance in some communities and parts of the country to accept people exiting direct provision or Ukrainian refugees as tenants or even neighbours." And it also says, if the country's economic circumstances worsen and unemployment rates begin to rise, this situation will get worse. Karen McHugh is the joint chair of the Leash Integration Network, and she is based in Portlaoise. Karen, good morning.
Good morning, Will. Thank you for having me on.
Are you seeing signs of this already?
I will have to be honest to say, in Leash, in Portlaoise, certainly we haven't seen signs of this already, but we know there are undercurrents there and always have been, and I think always will be.
Well, it might be helpful to explain what happens, whether there is competition for housing. So a family arrives here in Ireland and they come to County Leash. Where generally at the moment are they being placed?
Is this asylum seekers?
Yes.
Or,
let's say families from Ukraine, which you would be perhaps most directly working with now.
Well, families, anybody that arrives to Ukraine will either arrive to hosted accommodation with a family here in Ireland, which is a voluntary, or it's a private arrangement supported by local council. Otherwise, people will go to either where people are placed at the moment, hotels or guest houses dotted around the county. So it's generally one or other at the moment.
Hmm. And in the case of somebody in the direct provision system, they may, well, first go to a reception centre such as the Hazel Hotel in Monasterevin. Then there's the former Montague, which is a direct provision centre in its own right. There's another such facility in County Westmeath as well in Athlone.
Yeah.
So once they eventually get over this reception process, how then is a more permanent home found?
Well, generally a more permanent home, let's say if somebody who gets refugee status as an asylum seeker or somebody who may be in either state-provided accommodation through bed and breakfast or hotels, if they get work, generally people will be looking for private rented accommodation on the private market, which is open to everybody else, which is a challenge, as we know. So that's generally the avenue for everyone, really. So there's no automatic right or entitlement for housing at all.
So, but that is the point at which the competition kicks in, where you've a scarce supply of accommodation and now even more people looking for it.
Absolutely, yes. Certainly that's not a problem that was developed by anybody seeking a protection in this country. We have a large number of vacant properties, which I'm delighted to hear that the government are doing a call out now again to look for vacant properties to be put into residents. So I think if there's there certainly is a challenge with supply in terms of what's available on the market, but we equally have properties that are available that are sitting either vacant or are derelict, that you only have to drive around the county, both of Leash and Offaly and throughout the whole of Ireland, to see, you know, the amount of accommodation that's actually sitting idle. Equally from the Fair Deal scheme, there are over 8,000 homes that are cannot be rented because of the conditions of the Fair Deal, and there is an estimation that at least 3,000 of those could be made available. So,
and what's particularly sad about that situation is those houses are unused in a cold winter, and their state of repair is going to decline if they're not occupied.
And now is a perfect time if people want to look at, you know, from accommodating, we'll say, I'll talk about Ukrainian refugees initially. The government subsidy now is increasing from 400 to 800. So while that won't always cover the cost, you know, of heating and maintenance of, let's say, those properties you mentioned, nursing, the people who are in nursing home, it will certainly keep the place warm, and it will keep it in a pretty good condition. So that's 3,000 properties dotted around the country, and there's, I think it's over 160,000 vacant, and the derelict properties, I don't know if it's 250,000 or more. So that we have a lot of property in Ireland. So, you know, we can actually support everyone in this country. So it's not about one group against the other. It's about looking at a solution-focused provision of accommodation. We have it in place. So I suppose I'd urge the central government and the local government, which I know local governments here in Leash certainly are doing so much just around the whole private hosting arrangements, you know, let's have an action-based plan to look at a solution that everyone's accommodation needs are met. It isn't just about one or other here.
But that's the danger in scarce supply. And yes, if the low-hanging fruit isn't grasped in terms of those fair deal houses and other suggestions you mentioned, then it will become inevitably, like most competitions, a bit excessive and a bit nasty.
Yes. Absolutely. And, you know, as I said at the very beginning, these elements are in our society already. They are across Europe and the world. And, you know, it's not always, I suppose, about the issue of housing. There is an anti-racist and a far-right sentiment that is in our society. Thankfully, it's a small percent, and we're very fortunate it is a small percent in Ireland, and the majority of people are welcoming and are supportive of people coming to our country.
Yes, and equally, there are people who would turn their nose at a homeless person and feel it's their fault and bad choices and be unsympathetic. Yeah. And the reality is there are many groups with genuine needs. And Karen, I'm grateful for
Absolutely.
The time you've given us today and for the work that you do. Thank you very much for the call.
And can I just say one final thing? You know, Irish have left Ireland in search of better opportunities, be it since the famine. You know, we were a community who sought refuge as well, and we still are a society that have a huge number of immigrants, and more immigrants left Ireland this year, in search mostly for work now. But, you know, I just call for people to have a little bit of empathy and understanding and support, and to reach out, seek information before opinions are formed.
Karen McHugh of the Leash Integration Network, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Will. Have a good day. Thank you.
I should credit, by the way, the authors of that report I mentioned earlier. Former Secretary General at the European Commission, Catherine Day, Lorcan Sir, who's a lecturer, and former Ambassador to the United Nations, David Donoghue. They're warning government that the shortage of housing, particularly if it is coupled with a decline in the country's economic circumstances and a rise in unemployment, it could lead to racist tensions and confrontation. And, well, you've just heard Karen's perspective on how some of that can be avoided by freeing up those properties she mentioned. Is there anything else we're not thinking of? Do you have a take on this? 083 30 10 103 on text and WhatsApp, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. It's the 24th of November. 1 month to go until Christmas Eve. Have you got your tree arranged? Because the real Christmas trees, the fresh Christmas trees, will become widely available this week. And are you the sort who will have nothing else but the real thing in your living room? Or are you content to have the artificial tree? Well, if you're the former, there are ways in which you can make the tree as fresh as possible for as long as possible. Question for you: when is the correct time to put up your Christmas tree? When is considered too early? Well, Midlands 103's Chloe Farrell has been asking people that very question.
It's a tradition in our house that we always have decorations up for the toy show. We have to have them up for the toy show, and that's it.
I'd probably have to say the start of December, because otherwise just the novelty wears off.
Probably the start of December.
What do you think of people putting them up early?
It's very stupid, extremely stupid, and they probably shouldn't be doing that because they just get messy and dirty.
Probably the end of November. I feel like the earlier you put them up, the quicker you get sick of them.
Why would you bother when you're just going to ruin Christmas for yourself? You know, you're going to get sick of looking at it by the time Christmas comes along.
Whenever you feel that you'd like to. In my case, I've already put some up already. If it's back into the summer or something, no. No, but I think once the evenings get dark and everything like that, I think it's a nice thing to do then.
End of November. Probably the 23rd, 24th before the toy show.
The first week in December, I think, is plenty of time, I think.
What do you think of people who put them up really early?
I think it makes it drag out for the smaller kids. Do you know what I mean? It makes it seem a bit longer to wait for Santa or whatever. Do you know? Usually the first Sunday of December I usually put them up, yeah. Yeah.
We're different for Hungarian. Mine is up on the 24th of December. And it's down on the 6th of January. That's it. I don't mind in their own houses. I don't like this because I'm looking at it for too long. You know, shopping centres. And I think December, first week of December, is plenty of time. I think it ruins their spirits, in my opinion.
Good mixture of opinion there. Hate to be in Hungary. Christmas only starts on the 24th of December? Donal Levy, you wouldn't do much business in Hungary on that basis. You run Levy's Farm, Christmas Tree Farm, in Castletown Gagan. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
When does business pick up for you, Donal?
Well, we've been working at it for the last 2 weeks, getting out our wholesale orders, and people that make wreaths kind of come in early, trees that aren't perfect, they strip those for making wreaths. So we've been quite busy over the last 2 weeks.
So when is the peak that might suggest when most people put up their tree?
Retailers would prefer to have their trees in for the last week of November, so the people can actually see them and know that they have them. The peak time would be in and around the 8th, the weekend of the 8th.
Yeah, that would seem to correspond with many of the views on the Vox Pop there, but some going early for Toy Show, which is this coming Friday. Any advice on maximising not just how long the tree will last, but its appearance too, given that some will be putting them in place in or around now and having them up for 6 weeks?
Well, I think the main one is to keep it away from a heat source like a radiator or close to a fireplace that will just dry them out. A lot of people are now opting for water stands. When you get the tree home, basically you just take a couple of millimetres off the bark around the circumference of the base of the tree, a fresh cut, so to speak, because the bark is what's actually alive in the tree, not the actual timber. So, and just drop it into the water, and it'll take, depending on the size of the tree, anything up to a litre of water a day.
Oh gosh, that much?
Yeah, yeah.
So is plain water sufficient, or should you add? I've heard of people, for instance, putting flat 7-Up into it.
A new one to me, but I'm sure if it was going through a litre of that a day, it's a bit expensive.
It would become, yeah. But you don't recommend any nutrients or any addition to the water.
So.
Plain water is fine.
Yeah. So when the tree is cut, it seals itself straight away. And that's why you have to do kind of a fresh cut, you know, with a bread knob or something, just a clean cut, just a couple of millimetres. And that works really well.
Where would most of your customers be, given that you're based so centrally in Castletown Gagan, Donal?
I have two major schools in Dublin that we've been supplying for the last 3-4 years. And I've quite a few customers from the west of Ireland, where transport is a big issue, kind of where the bulk of trees are kind of grown. It's quite a distance. So, and they come up with their trailers and pick up the trees.
So how many trees altogether will you go through?
We would hope to go through roughly in the region of, we're a small plantation, and we don't take them out kind of systematically. We just select the ones that are good, and so there's a little bit more effort kind of dragging them out in that. So we would do about 1,000 trees a season. And we would have people that would actually come here to kind of choose and cut. Some people really like that. They hang around for about an hour walking through the trees until they find the perfect one. So
nice, we'll make a day out then.
Yeah. It's quite nice. It's a fairly attractive location.
And finally, Donal, how does demand this year compare with previous years?
Well, we've lost a couple of customers, a couple of big customers, and we've picked up a couple. So I think we're probably going to match same as last year. That's the hope.
Oh, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. Yeah. Donal, great talking with you. Thanks for the advice.
And you. Happy Christmas to everybody.
and many happy returns. Donal Levy runs Levy's Christmas Tree Farm in Castletown, Gagan. The final Scally review was published yesterday. Dr. Gabriel Scally, who investigated the circumstances of cervical check and the controversy that has cost the lives of all too many women, and indeed led many more, the so-called 221 Plus group, to campaign for transparency. Among the suggestions was that many of these women have been shunned by the medical profession. They've been treated as lepers. Good morning. Now, still to come today, and still to discuss, check your lotto tickets. A €500,000 winner bought theirs in Athlone this week, and that is not the only big money ticket here in the Midlands. More details later. And is Mullingar home to Disney's next dance star? You'll meet her in around 15 minutes. Now, when you call, 0818 300 103 is my number. You can text or WhatsApp 083 30 10 103, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. We owe it to cervical campaigner Vicky Phelan to fully implement the recommendations made in the Scally report. That is the view of Dr. Gabriel Scally himself, who found substantial progress has been made on cervical check, but there is still serious work to be done. He says improvement in the system is a must.
From my point of view, the best tribute we could pay to Vicky Phelan is to implement the recommendations about improving the system. That's what she cared about, and that's what she spent the last few years fighting for. So movement on the recommendations, for me, is so important, and it is a must.
Paul Hosford is political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. Paul, you've been parsing through everything that Dr. Scally has had to say and had to report. And can we start with his remark that some of these women were treated like lepers? Good morning.
Good morning, Will. Sorry, you'll have to bear with me. I'm on a train that's running late. I suppose that's the main line, or one of the main lines that my colleague Elaine Loughlin has done today on our front page. Some of the women affected that group, that 221 Plus campaign group, they've said that basically when they go to consultants, when they go and ask for treatment, they're being asked, are they members of this group? Gabriel Kelly said that he's heard directly from those women that the clinicians have asked them, are they associated with 221 Plus before they'll consider treatment? And one woman in his report said that she felt that she'd been treated like a leper. Cervical check campaigner Lorraine Walsh backed that up. She said that in some cases, consultants will not see them anymore. Will not see these women anymore. These are the women and men who have fought for this review, who fought for an overhaul of the screening system. So, kind of stark, I suppose, the indictment of how the system treats these women still to this day. A lot of these women have already won or gone through high court cases or the tribunal, and to this day the system itself in the state of healthcare system is still treating them really, really poorly.
All right, Paul, I'm afraid the line is really poor. We're going to try and give you a call back. Appreciate your in transit at the moment. Let's go through some comments. We were talking before the 10 o'clock news about Christmas trees, and Ina, you only put up your tree the week before Christmas. Duncan, on the idea of real Christmas trees, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, he says, I'm surprised Eamon Ryan hasn't imposed a ban on the sale of them. We will see lots of Green Party members protesting any shop or garden centre selling them. Or will they secretly be there to purchase one? Think of the total decimation of forests in the search of the real Christmas tree. Think green and leave them alone, he says. This caller, Keith, disagrees, though.
You should be allowed to put up a Christmas tree any time you want from November on. I always put mine up the end of November, the sales up until Christmas is over. This year, people need a bit of hope in their lives and to enjoy this Christmas. After all the lockdowns we had, after everything we had we need to enjoy Christmas this year.
Now, regarding the accommodation crisis, one caller finds themselves in a tussle with the county council because they have been living in their mother's house. However, sadly, she has recently passed away, and now the council expects him to move out. Pronto. What do you do in that situation? And he notes there are no houses available in his area to rent. Never mind the question of affordability, there are just no houses. A similar text here. Well, my daughter went to college, spent many years in Limerick, and she was taking any job going to get through. She finally landed her dream job, but her landlord is now selling up, and so she must leave the house by the end of the month. But again, there's nowhere to rent in her price range. Most people just want to be treated fairly, but if you open your mouth, the racist card is pulled, and you are afraid to say anything. Yes, many people from Ireland went abroad years ago, and indeed still do, but they never had it easy. And it is breaking our hearts to think she may have to come home and give up her dream job, sit here and go on the dole and never have that opportunity again. It's not a big paying job, but she loves it, and indeed the people she works with. We'll be back to that in a few minutes. Now, let's continue our conversation about the final Gabriel Scali review of the cervical check controversy and the lessons learned and indeed the recommendations made thereafter. Paul Husford of the Irish Examiner, you were talking us through how many of those ladies had been treated since. Let's focus now on the 50 recommendations and how much progress has been made towards achieving them.
Yeah, so the final review has found that of the more than 50 recommendations, there's now a substantially better screening programme than there was in 2018. And this is something that I suppose people have focused on. That was kind of, for a lot of people, that's the overall, I suppose that's the overall main intention of this review, is to have a better screening programme. This review has found that has happened, that it is the case now, that it's better. But he said that there is an issue still with the issue of open disclosure, this idea that doctors and clinicians will speak to their patients more openly, that they will tell them when there are mistakes or when there are failures in treatment. He said that the issue there is still a hurtful attitude which is prevalent across the healthcare system. One of the interesting things that Gabriel Scali said yesterday was less about the implementation of these recommendations in letter. He was talking about implementing them in spirit.
Mm.
And there is a piece of legislation there about open disclosure. But he, you know, Dr. Scali was very clear. He feels, and the 221 Plus campaigners feel, that the amendments that have been attached to it now have watered it down to the point where it's unrecognisable. It's not what it's meant to be. It doesn't achieve what it set out to do. And he feels that it's just a cultural issue that just has not been solved within the HD, within the Department of Health, and within the government generally.
Well, many years ago, after the unfortunate deaths of babies at Portlaoise Hospital and elsewhere, there were many commitments to putting open disclosure on a statutory basis, but it never happened. Does he take a position on that?
He hasn't yet, but I suppose he's kind of talked around it. He says that the proposed laws at the minute are problematic and limited. That only applies to a tiny proportion. He hasn't said whether or not he believes it should be passed or not, but he's kind of said that this doesn't necessarily go as far as it should go. He said that all healthcare professionals should have a duty when things go wrong to deal with them in an open manner, with the openness and grace and compassion that they deserve. Labour's Alan Kelly, who was a good friend of Vicky Phelan, he said that the current patient safety bill, which was first introduced in 2019, is just not fit for purpose. He said that the Taoiseach should amend it before Christmas. And I think a lot of people who are close to Vicky Phelan, a lot of people who knew her, they would say that that is the best way to to really honour her spirit. They, you know, last week in the Dáil when they went through the tributes to Vicky Phelan, most of the opposition politicians referenced that quote of hers where she said that she doesn't want tributes, she doesn't want the aide de camp at her funeral, she wants action, she wants change. And Gabriel Scally really hit on that yesterday about it's not just the letter of what he had recommended in 2018, it's about the spirit of it, and that spirit of openness is still really missing, he feels.
Let's talk about complaints. Ultimately, sometimes people have to go to court if they need redress, if they need compensation. The HSE has a complaints mechanism called Your Service, Your Say. Many advocates would say that's not good enough, it's not effective enough, it's not independent enough. What does he say about a complaints mechanism?
Yes, this is one of the, I suppose, this is one issue that comes up again and again when you're talking about surplus checking, when you're talking about the Scally report, is that those who have been affected, who are affected by issues within the HSE, find that complaint system really, it's hard to navigate. It's not, they don't feel that it's independent. He said that he's been astounded that there's a prohibition in the law against people making complaints to the HSE about a clinical judgment made by a doctor working for the HSE. He said that it's puzzling that under the 2004 Health Act that you can't make a complaint to the HSE against a doctor if your care has been funded by the HSE. He said that system just isn't fit for a purpose. And I suppose most people, until you're actually, it's one of those systems that until you're in it, most people wouldn't be aware that's the case, that you wouldn't be able to make that complaint. So he says that it's strange that it's still in, that's still in place. But he also adds that, you know, or I suppose that most people would say that's not how any complaint system works. If you have a complaint on, you know, in a retail setting or you know, with any other state agency, you can make complaints directly to the people who employ those who you're complaining about. And I suppose this comes back to, if you come back to our front page story today, Elaine Loughlin, my colleague, contacted the HSE to ask about whether or not clinicians and physicians were rejecting 221 plus survivors for treatment. And the HSE came back and directed the queries to the Irish Hospital Consultants Association and the Royal College of Physicians. Now, the Royal College of Physicians is a training body. The IHCA is a union. The HSE is their employer. It's very strange that in any situation that you would ask a question about the conduct of an employee and be directed to a union. I wouldn't be able to ring the Gardaí tomorrow and ask about a complaint about a member of an Garda Síochána and be directed to the GRA. That's not how any other organisation works. And this is something that the 221 Plus group comes up against again and again, that the structures and the systems in the HSE are very, very hard to navigate, but they also seem to, I suppose, they also seem to exist on a very different level to other state agencies. So the idea that you can't ask a question about the professional conduct of a doctor, that you can't make a complaint about a clinician under this 2004 Health Act, still feels very, very strange to most people.
His report extends to 39 pages. We've only just scratched the surface of some of the issues in it. And he had been asked to conduct this final progress report by the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, timely as it is now that it comes so soon after the death of Vicky Phelan and the appetite for action being reignited. Has the Minister made any comment or commitment after what Dr. Scally has found?
Yeah, so late last night we got the kind of the slew of statements from different ministers. Stephen Donnelly, he welcomed the publication, said that Gabriel Scally has made an immense contribution to women's health and the improvement of cervical screening in Ireland. He said that the work is noteworthy. He kind of, like I suppose most people in that situation, he goes off on the he leads off on the positive commentary that there's been improvements in the cervical check screening program, including better governance, move to HPV screening and quality assurance system. Then he says that he acknowledges Dr. Scally's concerns about open disclosure. He says honesty and transparency are vital in healthcare and should be embedded in the culture of the health service. I suppose the issue then is he says that, you know, the path to that open disclosure is the Patient Safety Bill from 2019, which he says provides a legislative framework for a number of important patient safety issues, including mandatory open disclosure and the expansion of HICWA's remit into private hospitals. Going back to what Dr. Scally said yesterday, he doesn't believe that this piece of legislation goes far enough. Patients groups don't believe that it goes far enough, and 2-to-1+ don't believe that it goes far enough. But the minister seems, judging on this statement, committed to the idea of passing that bill before Christmas.
Paul Hosford of the Irish Examiner, thank you as always for your time.
No problem.
Let's change gears completely. So, from as young as 4, this next lady was learning to dance, watching Disney movies, getting wrapped up in all of those dreams and fantasies. And now she's at the stage where she will watch herself in the latest Disney production, Disenchanted. So let's chart that journey now with Eleanor Waldron from Mullingar. Good morning, Eleanor.
Good morning.
Bring us back to childhood and tell us about those early days.
So I started dancing at 4. I went to Shawbrook Ballet School in Longford with my teacher, Annika Lowe. And I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with ballet, with music, performing. And I was lucky enough, she took me across Europe dancing. And I competed in the World Dance Championships at 17. And from there, I got a scholarship to study in Cheltenham at a performing arts school. And it's been an amazing journey.
Indeed. It sounds like it was plan A all along. Or did you have a backup in case some of those international competitions didn't go your way?
No, there was no backup. It was I was very lucky. I had a very supportive family that, you know, took me everywhere and were my driving force. And there's never been a backup. It's always been dance.
Well, that's a characteristic of many very determined and focused people. You go all in. And how did the part in Disenchanted come about?
Well, they were holding, I saw that they were doing open auditions. And at this time, you know, COVID was rife and things were difficult for performers. Everyone was housebound. And when, you know, you're used to auditioning in person and, you know, going and being in a studio. So it was very, very difficult to do everything through a screen and kind of look your best. And, you know, you're shoving furniture to the side to try and make room so that you can perform. And it was crazy, but it felt like a miracle. It all worked out and got through to the next stage and then the next stage. And all of a sudden it was, you know, you're going to be in a Disney movie. And it was like, oh my God.
When did you get that news?
I got that news. I mean, I think I first auditioned I read about the audition in January. So it was quite early. And then they started doing auditions in late February. And I think I got the news, sometime in March. And then we didn't start going, flew over for rehearsals end of May.
So how do you spend those weeks and months waiting and managing the excitement and focusing on other things and trying to live a normal life?
It felt like a really sort of needed uplift because I think, you know, so many people experienced it during COVID that when you're used to performing, you're used to being on a stage and your outlet is, you know, movement or singing or anything like that. COVID was like it was a horrible time. I mean, it was horrible for everyone, but when that was your job, you kind of felt really lost. So to get news like that, for that to be your thing coming out of COVID, it was just, I mean, quite literally magical.
So it was filmed mainly in Dublin and in Enniskerry. Talk to us about being on set and what that was like.
Oh, the sets and the costumes and just seeing the grand scale of everything was absolutely incredible. And what they did to Enniskerry, I mean, it was just, you walked on and you literally felt like you were in a fairy tale. It was incredible what they did. And then, in Dublin, the studios they built. I mean, in the movie, the house and the ballroom, it's all in a studio in Dublin. And to see it, you know, to see it live on set and then to see it on a screen, it was just the magic they brought to it. It was so incredible.
And it stars Amy Adams, Patrick Dempsey, Idina Menzel, many people will remember from Frozen. So you've got an all-star cast there. What's the etiquette around interacting with these people?
Well, I think a lot of us were actually quite nervous because we were dancing in the studios with like Amy Adams and Patrick Dempsey, and we were there on set with Maya Rudolph and things. So I think we did feel quite nervous, but when they were in the studios with us, it was so normal and they were so lovely. And you kind of almost have this expectation, and you almost don't want to, you don't know if someone of such a high caliber is going to be, you know, a diva or something. Mm. You don't want to step on toes or, you know, say the wrong thing, but it just didn't feel like that at all. And yeah, Idina Menzel, I mean, she has an absolutely incredible song in it, Love Power. That was another thing. The music was just, you know, listening to Disney music before it was released was a really special thing. And we all had the music stuck in our heads all the time.
And yeah, in the meantime, you're trying to do your best and fit in. And do you get feedback?
You don't really. The only kind of, I guess, like feedback or anything we got was just I had a bit of a crazy moment where when we wrapped and we'd finished the last scene, it was a ballroom scene, and this was in June, so it was also Pride Month. And when we finished, they started playing "I'm Coming Out" by Diana Ross, and we were just all in costume on the dance floor, and we just, you know, started having a dance. Mm-hmm. And I just heard this voice over my shoulder going, "Oh, you guys are just absolutely amazing." And I thought it was someone from like costume or makeup, and I was turned around and just like, "Oh, thanks so much." And it was Maya Rudolph.
And oh, wow.
She just sort of, yeah, she, like the fact that she was complimenting, you know, like us on what we do and saying that we were all, you know, incredible and she's loved watching us. It was like, you know, you're trying not to bow at her feet.
Yeah, that's a moment to replay in your mind again and again and again, isn't it?
It was really, really incredible. And she was so lovely and funny and just as funny in person as what you would think. You know, she had everyone laughing on set and just, yeah, everyone was so amazing.
And once it's over, Eleanor, and you've had, bear in mind, the months of auditioning and then the anticipation and then the elation of being there. Once it wraps and you go home, what then?
I think for a lot of people, we walked away from that and it felt like a recharge, you know, after a year and, you know, more of, you know, feeling isolated and kind of wondering where the world was going. It just felt like a really uplifting, inspiring journey, and just the reboost I think everyone needed coming out of lockdown. It was, yeah, a lot of people have gone on to do really, really amazing things after it. And it's opened a lot of doors for a lot of people.
So you could ride the crest of a wave then.
Yeah. And like even myself, I'm working on my own film at the moment. I've choreographed, directed and produced my own film, which has been absolutely amazing. And it's just, yeah, it's been a really inspiring journey and kind of made me look more towards that route.
Well, it helps having Disney on your CV, of course, doesn't it?
It's definitely not a bad thing, yeah. No.
Have you seen the movie?
Yes, I was invited to a screening in Dublin. It was absolutely insane to sit and see it on a cinema screen because it's not been released in cinemas. It's just, it's on Disney Plus. So
yes.
We were very lucky to watch it.
Yeah, it's out, I think, about a week at this stage. Have you had any feedback? Like from friends, from family?
Yeah, I've had quite a lot because I was very prepared, you know, with the grand scale of it and how many dancers Rinna, I was very prepared to watch it and go, oh yeah, that was my boot, you know, and that was my only sort of right. moment. But you can actually, yeah, I got a really good viewing in it, like quite a few points. So I was so happy. So I've had so many people, everyone's come back to me to, you know, talking about it and saying they watched it. The support has been really, really incredible. And yeah, it's been great.
Hopefully only the beginning. Eleanor, best wishes for your career. Thank you so much for sharing the story with us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Eleanor Waldron from County Westmeath. You can see Disenchanted on Disney Plus. You get to a certain age and you've got more responsibility in work. You've got a house, mortgage to pay. You may have kids as well. And Lord knows they're demanding on your time. And eventually you find yourself at the bottom of the priority list. Well, Caroline Myers from Leash Sports Partnership wants to talk to you about that. Good morning, Caroline.
Good morning, Will. How are you?
I'm very well. And you're aiming this conversation particularly at the ladies because, well, look, I can only speak for my own household. Much of the aforementioned minding of the kids and minding of the house and so on falls on her shoulders. What do you want to get through? What's the message?
The message today is around a new campaign launched by Sport Ireland. It's called It's My Time. And I suppose the aim of this campaign is to encourage women to prioritise their well-being by getting more physically active on their own terms. So this is a campaign that was just launched yesterday. And I suppose it's just getting that key message out to women is to make time, how invaluable that time is for women, particularly women over 40, because most of the barrier for women over 40 is that they're either too tired or they have a lack of time or they have other things that takes preference over their own health and well-being and doing physical activity.
Let's start with that first one. I'm too tired. I think a lot of us can identify with that. The notion of getting home in the evening and going out, especially on a dark, blustery day, doesn't appeal.
No, and I'm one of those women, I suppose. I'm in the 40-plus category, and it is difficult. You're working full-time, you're running the household, you're managing kids, you're a taxi service, I suppose, dropping your kids to activity. So I suppose the message is here, how do I make time for myself? And it could be simple things. If you're that taxi driver dropping your kids to physical activity, well, maybe go for a walk, go for a run. Look what's happening in your local community through either the local sports partnerships or through clubs and community groups, and to see if there's maybe a running group or a social group or whatever it is, tennis, whatever it might be that might be interested in. But the message really is to try to prioritise time for ourselves and how important it is, not only for our health but also for our well-being as well.
But the energy component, how do you get the energy?
Yes, and look, sometimes I'm one of those people, I come in from work and even you're getting the dinner and the last thing you feel like doing is putting your coat on and going back out, as you said, into the weather. So the beauty of this campaign as well, there's a lot of online and social media and exercise videos that are only 15 minutes long. There's a wealth of resources on Sport Ireland, Sport Ireland website for It's My Time. So I would say maybe start off slowly, and then when you do those maybe 10, 15 minutes, take those for yourself and then build upon that on a daily basis.
Well, what do you do? Let's talk about your own personal confessions now, Caroline, because you've admitted you're that soldier as well. What tips and tricks did you find effective?
Well, sometimes I try to incorporate walking and my lunch break. And then obviously when my son, I would be quite busy, I suppose. I'm one of those taxi drivers, whereas I'm dropping him to a lot of, he's involved in team sports. So what I would try to do when he's training, I would go around the walking track. He's lucky enough that the facility has a walking track. If not, I would just maybe go around the well-lit area, especially in the wintertime. That's important safety as well. So, and then other days, I try to motivate myself at least once a week to do an online exercise. Exercise video rather than sitting on the couch. But what I found recently is I found some great sit fit exercise, so I can still sit in the couch but still exercise. So you know, it just depends on, I suppose, what our schedule is for that week. I kind of work around my physical activity around that, and I'm sure other women would relate to that, because you know, because obviously time is precious, you're working full time, you have a lot of barriers, but it's trying to get that message across that we are worth that time and it is worth investing Preston at least 30 minutes a day into our cells, because not only the health effects that, you know, being physically active have, it also helps us in all other aspects of our lives. So I think that's an important message to get across to your listeners.
But what I'm hearing there as well is that you're not leaving it until the very last task of the day, when your energy is most depleted. You're finding a way to do it when you're still up and running. Lunchtime being a fine example of it. You could just sit at your desk or sit in the canteen, munch your sandwich, read the paper, but instead you get out and you use that time in a different way.
Oh, 100%, Will. And, you know, time is precious for everybody. And, you know, you can break it down into 10-minute slots either if you want to, you know. So it is important. You don't do full 30 minutes at one go if you don't have that time. So it's just what works for you. It's finding what works for you and just making that step towards it. And I think that's the beauty of this campaign. It's just creating awareness out there for our women that we are important. And it is important that we do look after our health and well-being and get physically active, because it empowers us, but it also for the rest of other things in our life, it actually enhances everything else that we're doing. So if we're in good headspace, good physical activity, you know, feeling the benefits of being physically active, well, then it benefits other areas of our life.
Now, it's like momentum. The hardest part is to start going. Even like pushing a car. Once you get a car rolling, it's easier to keep it going. It's that initial push that takes the most energy and the most motivation. Now, it's a good chance to explain about not just Laois Sports Partnership, but there are others across Laois and Westmeath and Offaly and so on. The sort of activities that might be taking place locally that you don't know about.
Yeah, and definitely. If people look at the sportireland.ie/it's my time, they'll have a list of all the local sports partnerships in their area and obviously national governing bodies as well. So they can see a full list of programs that are actually happening currently in your local sports partnerships. So they would range from activities for younger people, older adults, and it could be walking, there would be couch to 5K groups, there would be sit-fit exercises, there would be, could be Zumba, Pilates, whatever, a wide range of activities to suit all abilities, and they're all very inclusive. So if you get direct people, I suppose, to that website on Sport Ireland, they will see a full list of all the sports partnerships that are in there and the activities that can get take part in their local area. And also, just apart from the local sports partnerships, we have the national governing bodies, like if there's a local athletic club, check in with them, maybe say there's a couch to 5K running there also, or a couch to 2K, or a tennis club, whatever you're interested. Just see what's in your local community and just tap into what's going on locally.
Caroline, great talking with you as always. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Will. Bye-bye.
Caroline Myers from Laois Sports Partnership. Search for the hashtag It's My Time. After the news at 11, check your lotto tickets. A €500,000 winner bought theirs in Athlone. And that's not the only big money win, I have to tell you. Now, still on the agenda today, where, oh, where is this second lotto win in the Midlands? Also, how do you fancy having your life story memorialised for centuries to come? And if you're planning a Black Friday online shopping binge, well, what are the latest scams you need to watch out for? Good morning. If you're planning to spend for Black Friday and indeed Cyber Monday, what are the latest scams for 2022? The scamsters are always one step ahead and you have to try and catch up. That's coming up in half an hour. Also today, the company that wants to memorialise your story, not necessarily for all time, that's probably a bit, but at least for the next 100 years. Details in around 10 minutes time. First though, we played ABBA before the news. Money, money, because there are many happy lotto winners here in the Midlands and Euro Millions winners, although they may not realise it yet. Fran Huerty joins us from the National Lottery. Good morning, Fran. You come bearing good news.
Hiya, Will. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, two days and two huge wins in the Midlands, and we're still waiting for the winners to get in touch.
Let's start with the big one. Tuesday, Athlone. What happened?
So we had a winner of the Euro Millions Plus €500,000 prize, and that was sold in totals. in the Golden Island Shopping Centre in Athlone. Now, the interesting thing about this ticket is it's a normal play ticket. So that means that somebody, it's a regular player that plays their own usual numbers. So we're asking everybody in Athlone that may have bought a ticket in Tuttle's to check their tickets and to give us a shout as soon as possible, and we'll get you paid right before Christmas.
It'd be very nice indeed.
Yeah.
Remind us, what are those numbers?
The numbers, they'll mean absolutely nothing to most people but one person. So the numbers are 2, 7, 12, 36 and 45. So look, the majority of people, I would say, in this day and age do play the quick picks. But for that person to have a normal play ticket, it's a huge deal. So that ticket is worth €500,000. So check them and get in touch with us as soon as possible.
Tell us about the second win.
So this is just the following day, on Wednesday, last night, the jackpot was €5.9 million. This person missed out by one number. So they matched five numbers and the bonus. And they bought their ticket at the Obama Plaza in Moneygall. So Moneygall by name and nature there.
Indeed, yeah.
So they missed out on the jackpot, but it was €225,000 and €634. So it's a big enough prize as well, just nearly €250,000. So that ticket was actually bought on Monday. So hopefully it's somebody local, but it also could have been somebody passing by.
Oh,
so
you'd have huge passing trade there, all right. It could be
huge.
Anywhere from Dublin to Limerick, I suppose.
It's huge. So hopefully it's local. You really never know with these things. And that was a quick pick.
All right. Remind us of the procedure again then, Fran.
Yeah, the procedure is, it's actually really simple. So once somebody checks their ticket, either in-store or on the app, they'll get a note on their phone basically to say, give us a shout. We're 1-800-222-666. So once they ring that, we start the process. It's very simple. Literally, you can claim it the very next day, but we always kind of say to people, if they can, give it a week or two, let the wind sink in before you claim it. But look, it's very simple. Once they get in touch, we'll guide them through every step of the way. And look, it would be such a nice amount of money, either of those prizes, before Christmas.
Do you still get up to the prize room, or is that only for the jackpot winners?
Absolutely not. If you come up with looking to claim 10 grand, 25 grand, we'll bring you up. It's a great experience, so we try and give as many people the experience as we can.
Oh, it's a dream. Hopefully one day it comes through. But for two people, you've given plenty of hope now that it could be a very nice Christmas indeed. Fran Huerty, thank you.
Thank you, Will.
That's Fran Huerty of the National Lottery. The store manager at Tuttle's in Athlone, by the way, Joe Callanan, says this is our first big win. We are absolutely over the moon. We are a small little store located in the busy Golden Island shopping centre. So we're kept going. Locals have told me that the previous store that was here before sold a big win on the National Lottery a couple of years ago. So we must be in a good spot. He also said, I'm sure we'll be swamped with customers and inquiries over the next few days. So we're very much looking forward to that. And we wish the winner all the best. Fingers crossed that it's you. You will now have the opportunity to leave personal video messages after you have passed away, and people will be able to access them from your gravestone. Yes, I know this is rather morbid, but a company in Cork is giving you the opportunity to put a QR code on your headstone, which can be scanned and accessed by anybody passing by. You can have it private, or you can have it public. It can be password protected if you wish. The co-founder of The Story Of is Judy Russell, and she's been telling Midlands 103's Chloe Farrell all about this project.
The Story Of is about connecting generations and using the technology that we have today to capture the stories of people who are living or deceased, to store those stories then on a web page through images, audio, video, or however you want to store text, and then share that web page simply using a QR code that can be attached to gravestones, urns, benches, or even printed on remembrance cards if you wanted. So what we do is we will kind of, if they come onto our site, we'll assist them with kind of curating the story of their loved ones. So we're kind of targeting like digital natives, people who grew up with the internet, who can then help their parents or elderly relatives to create a page with them. So for example, I would have created a page for my mum. One of the other co-founders, Danny, would have created a page for his grandfather who he never met. So it can be people who are, you know, here or not here. And then what will happen is they'll create the page and make the website, and then we'll get a QR code sent out to them. So it's an aluminium kind of circle, and that can be then attached with really, really sticky glue onto a gravestone, and it will stay there for, we're testing out how long they kind of last and things like that. So we're still in the process of discovering a lot of things along the way.
How did the idea come around for this?
Well, I filmed my mum about 10 years ago. I sat down and I just asked her loads of questions. Now, I work in video, so it's probably something to do with it, but I wanted to capture her life lessons, you know. Like, I'm always conscious, you know, my mum is like my best friend, and I'm always conscious that she's not going to be here for my whole life. So I was very, I suppose, cognizant that, you know, I needed to get those things on video. So I did that, and I had that for years, and I was kind of talking to people about the idea, and the idea in my head was a virtual, like a YouTube for older people's memories. And it was, you know, I was calling it Visual Legacy at the time, and I was trying to get people kind of, you know, excited about it, but I could never really push it over. And then I met Danny, one of the other co-founders, who was putting together a gravestone for his grandfather. And he was just saying, like, as he was doing it, he was like, you're only allowed to put on a certain amount of characters onto a gravestone. And it's very, you know, impersonal for a person who's lived for, you know, 70, 80 years and has all of these amazing stories and memories. So once we got together and had this conversation, we were like, he was saying about a QR code, and I was saying, right, if the QR code could lead to a site where there's multimedia, whatever that person wants or whatever their relatives have that they can add to that site. And we've been working on it now for about a year since.
What's the overall aim with it? Like, can anyone walking around the graveyard scan these codes, or is it only for people in each specific family?
Well, I suppose what we're realising is that, like, you know, everyone's different. So my mum, for example, she's happy to, like, she doesn't have a QR code yet because she's still here, thank God. But when she does, when she's not here any longer, she will have a QR code attached to her gravestone. And she's fine with anyone accessing all of her videos and all of her information and all of the wisdom that she has to share. But I know that, like, you know, a lot of people aren't as, you know, I suppose public as that, or extroverted, however you want to say it. So they might prefer to have their messages kind of unlisted or private, so that maybe only family members can access if it's passed on, or potentially with a password. Or they might have some content that they're happy to have public, like a name, picture and a brief biography. And then there might be a password protected part that gives a far more in-depth kind of, you know, retrospective kind of biography of their lives.
What can people add to this, like with pictures, videos, or is there kind of limits?
Well, do you know what? That's what we're like. That's what's taking us time to try and figure out. Like, do you limit the amount of information that people can come up and with? How do you limit that? So definitely, it's all multimedia. So text, images, audio, video, whatever people would prefer. Like, I know some people don't like being on video; they don't mind their audio being recorded, and some people would just rather text and images, which is totally fine. It's totally up the person who's, you know, who you're making it with, whatever they want. But I think it's difficult to kind of, you know, it has to be limited to a certain degree, but I think there's a bit of training involved in this. I think it's, you know, I think that we're all storytellers. That's our human connection. That's how we relate to each other and communicate with each other. But I think that everyone kind of maybe can learn a little bit of how to maybe curate their stories, that it's interesting for future generations or for the public to kind of use. So I see that as my part of the company is kind of advancing people's storytelling skills along the way.
Is this something that's already been rolled out, or when is the plans for it to be used?
We have a version, and everything is manual. So at the moment, anytime someone wants to create a profile, we can create it for them, but they have to, you know, send us their photo through Google Drive or WeTransfer. Like, we make it very simple, and we will provide questions for them to ask their relative, or to find out about their relative if they've already passed away. And then we will take all of that information and manually enter it onto a web page and order the QR code and get it delivered to them. So what we're trying to do now is we're, I suppose, at phase two of the business plan, is trying to raise enough investment that we can get this system automated onto some kind of software that we create, so that we don't have to manually do everything. That's the hope.
is it something that has to be paid for?
What we're doing is we're allowing people to reserve their domain name for free. So, like, if you can just go on and, you know, reserve Dystoria/Russell, and you can keep that. And then what we will do is, I suppose we're charging people €350 now, so that we have to manually help them create their web page with them virtually. We will send them the questions and work with them like one-to-one, so that we create a lovely page for them. But we're hoping once the software is developed, and then we can kind of offer this at scale, that we can then reduce the cost of this kind of self-service ability to do it yourself.
So her name is Judy Russell. The company is called The Story Of. How do you feel about it? Not sure would I want anybody passing by to be able to just scan on their phone a QR code and find out. Well, then again, there's not much to find out. And you know something? In 100 years, how many of us will be remembered? Probably very, very few. So, is it something you'll consider, or is it not really your cup of tea at all? I think I'm in the latter camp. But anyway, let me know. 083 30 10 103 on text and WhatsApp, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. And here's what some people have already been saying on other issues. Regarding the person whose mum recently passed away, unfortunately, and now they're in a tussle with the County Council over the right to remain in the house. Well, I have been through this with a county council. If you live in the home for more than 2 years with your parent, you cannot be put out. I hope that's the case everywhere. Will, I watched Vicky Phelan's story on television last night, and it shattered any faith I had that no stone would be left unturned, says Sean. I wonder if more could have been done, even in my own case, as my wife has dementia. She's been on the same medication for years now, without any benefits, just side effects, I'm afraid. I really question the competence of the medical profession. And we'll take one or two more. Yes, the lady talking earlier about housing and about racial tension. This is a text. And if you missed it, we were speaking with the Leash Integration Network after government has been warned that if the economy declines, if the employment levels fall, if there's a competition for housing between Irish people and refugees, it is going to lead to racial tension. Bit of a no-brainer, but nevertheless, that's what the report said. This text says, when you have citizens on a waiting list for years, you've first-time buyers who cannot afford to get on the property ladder, and they're suddenly pushed to one side to house foreign nationals. Well, no wonder Ireland is entertaining a phase of right-wing parties. It's only a matter of time before they become a major political force. And the competition here as well is between perception and reality, because if you heard what the lady from Leash Integration Network said earlier, once you emerge from a direct provision centre, from a reception integration centre, then you are not leapfrogging anybody on the housing list. You're assessed in the same way anybody else is. But there's a myth that there's favouritism, that there are extra criteria given to people in those circumstances. And that sort of myth suddenly becomes truth in the minds of many people. That's the dilemma. Black Friday tomorrow, Cyber Monday coming up as well. So a huge amount of business going to be transacted online. Well, we're talking tech in a few minutes with Andy O'Donoghue. He'll keep you wise to some of the new scams for 2022. We've had an email from Miss Republican. Good morning, Miss Republican. She says, the caller whose daughter got her dream job and has had to consider leaving it because accommodation is so scarce, is absolutely spot on the money. The Irish did not have it easy when they went abroad. They were treated like dirt. Even the wealthy ones were treated badly. JFK and RFK were killed because they were Irish. Just basic racism. Right. How many Irish actually wanted to move to Australia 2 centuries ago? They were forcefully removed by a colonial power. Refugee NGOs now need to be defunded by the government. says this listener on email, studio@midlands103.com. Now, not everybody disagrees, so let me give you an opposing view. This is from Maureen in Mount Mellick. Will, I am sick of people saying, what about the Irish? People coming to our country for protection are coming from awful circumstances, and they need all the help they can get. The Irish are always growling. The Irish are treated very well by their government, and maybe if the Irish didn't drink and smoke as much as they do, they would be able to manage their finances. OK. Say how you really feel today, isn't it? Let's move on to perhaps something that we won't get in as much trouble for. Well, that's if we mind our P's and Q's and indeed watch all the precautions online. Black Friday, Cyber Monday. Let's talk tech with Andy O'Donoghue. Morning, sir.
Good to talk to you, Will.
So we hear the usual advice and very sage advice every year about making sure sites are secure before you transact and so on and so forth. Are there any new tricks the scammers are using this year?
Well, it's I think undoubtedly, Will, we're going to see some new scams. And what was interesting for me was earlier on in the week, I saw the report from the Banking and Payments Federation, and they've been looking into the amount of money that's been scammed. And believe it or not, fraudsters stole nearly 45 million euros through frauds and scams in the second half of 2021. So this time last year, and that was up 37% on the previous year, which is hard to believe when you think how much shopping was done during lockdown.
Yeah, so, online, of course, people would have transacted more, presumably, in 2020 than 21. They would have been at least released to go to the shops physically.
Exactly, exactly. So it means there's more scammers out there. But look, Black Friday is an opportunity to buy some stuff that you need. And that's one of the things you need to avoid, and don't buy stuff that you don't need. But we can come back to the kind of bargains that you might see later. But I would say, Will, the one that I have seen myself, I've already received in the last 2 weeks, I've received 7 or 8 of these delivery fraud messages. And they are probably the most common, but very clever. And you get a text message, an SMS, comes to your phone, and it will say, on Post or DHL or Federal Express, tried to deliver your package and you weren't home. Now, of course, it's not from those companies, but it will also say to reschedule delivery, click here. Or a really clever one that's come on over since Brexit is it will say you need to pay €9.50 in customs charges. And the problem is, Will, you click on the link and most of them will then try to get you to enter your card details to make that small payment. And then once you do, of course, they suck the funds from your account up to your limit. So you really have to be careful, because if you are expecting a package, let's say you order this week or on Black Friday, and you're expecting a package next week, you might see this text message and think, I missed delivery, but I was here. Oh, well, I'll pay the fee and reschedule it. So please, I would say to your listeners, be very careful about that.
How do you differentiate the real from the fraud?
Well, the Ompost have done a very clever thing, and I have to give them credit for this. This is really good thinking. They have, so I had exactly this situation earlier in the week. I received a text from Ompost that said I owed about €9 in customs duty, some little gadget that I had bought. And I said, okay, so I did not use the text message. It directed me to Ompost, and they have a special page set up for customs fees. So the best thing to do, I suggest, is go to the Ompost website, find the page and start there. Mm. And this is about trust, Will. And when you're using a website to buy, you should always look for the padlock in the top left-hand corner beside the address bar. That shows you that there's it's a secure website. But also, if you're expecting a package, go to the courier website and start there rather than responding to the text. I think that's a really, you take your own route rather than be directed by what could be a fake message.
Yes, yes. And indeed, for telephone details and so on, always make sure that you are calling the actual company and go to their website to verify the real phone number, because there are many websites mimicking the real brand with fraudulent contact details to fraudulent call centres. It's a very sophisticated scam.
It is, and there aren't very sophisticated scams. One of the things I would generally say about Black Friday is, and I know this is, it's kind of tough on new and small business, but if you can buy from somebody you know, a company that you've heard of, you see their ads on the telly or they're down, you know, on your local main street, that's good advice, I think. So if you know them, if you're buying from overseas and you know the big online retailers and you've bought from them before, you think that's okay. But it's tough on new business. And so you do have to assure yourself that the company really exists. And I have seen the most remarkable scam earlier on in the year, where scammers set up a website that was purporting to be selling overstocked iPhones. Now, as we know, in the global shortage of computer components, there is no shortage of, there is no overstocking of iPhones or most electronics at the moment. There's a shortage of them. And they were advertising iPhones. We only have 100 of these at €99. And of course, it was a complete scam. And the website disappeared about 3 weeks later after they were rumbled, but after they had collected hundreds of thousands of euros from people, I believe.
Here's another one, not related to Black Friday, but a caller recently received a text, supposedly from the HSE, telling them that somebody they're friends with has tested positive for COVID. They were asked to click on a link, book an appointment, and pay a small charge. Now, I haven't been around very many people. I know the company I keep, and I didn't do it. But any opportunity, any trend, any dilemma that people find themselves in will be exploited.
It will. It absolutely will. And I mean, you know, it's also very it's very malicious, and it's a very sort of you know, that leveraging on people's fear and worry and indeed hardship. Recently, I've seen somebody sent me some texts they had received, and it was an SMS that said, you are getting early access to your fuel grant of €250. Click the link to enter your bank account details.
And who wouldn't want that? Yeah,
exactly. So, you know, I would say you do have to be very careful shopping online because of the anonymous nature of it. It's, you know, it's not like handing your money over the counter. So please, I would say to everybody, be very careful.
This isn't a scam in the sense that we've been talking, but Steve points out that, in his view, the biggest Black Friday scam are retailers claiming something is on special offer when, in fact, it's not.
This is a great point that Steve makes, and it's something that we have seen a lot of conversation about over the last few years. And I have noticed, I've been looking at a lot of Black Friday prices this week, and I'm delighted to see that the bigger retailers, so the electrical retailers around the country, they're all advertising their TVs and their hi-fi equipment and everything, computers. But when you click in and you see the page, the product page, as they'd call it, which is where the price is, there's a little, most of them have now added this little piece of text that tells you the discount amount, so maybe €200 off a TV. But they have put when the original price applied to that product. So I was looking up an LG television the other night. It was an exceptional, really good deal on it. And I clicked in and I thought, wow, so that's been on its full price up to October. So to me, then that sounds like a good deal. Whereas if it was at its original price 6 or 10 months ago, you think, not so good. So that's really, I'm glad retailers have done it. I think it's about time that we're seeing this, but it also adds transparency to us as shoppers.
Andy, stay there for a moment. And indeed, if you've got a question, 083 30 10 103 is the Midlands 103 text line, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. Andy shall be here for another 15 minutes if you wish to pick his brain. Let's move on away from Black Friday and Cyber Monday. Although if you have a question, still time to ask it of Andy. I'm just going on Twitter now, and every time I open my feed, Andy, I see Elon Musk there making some comment or other. He's really playing into his critics. He shared an image of a T-shirt last night, hashtag stay at work, a reference to wanting his employees back in the office. Is this working for him or against him?
Well, It really is hard to know, Will. The story behind that T-shirt is an interesting one. If you scroll back through his tweets from a few days ago, he posted a photo of a cupboard at Twitter HQ, and it seems to be full and bulging out with those black T-shirts. But what they actually said was "Stay woke," hashtag Stay woke.
All right.
And Elon is not a fan of the old sort of way of thinking at Twitter. And so he was having a bit of a jibe at the old management when he came up with his Stay at Work T-shirt. Well, I mean, some people are calling this the beginning of the end, others the start of a new beginning. My own feeling is that the next time that Twitter is sold or returns to the public markets as a quoted company, it'll be worth three times what he paid for it. I think that Elon Musk has succeeded in so many different aspects, and including in the online and in the internet business, as well as everything else he does. I think he'll make this work. I think Twitter will probably take, it will take certainly take months, and we've seen it's been chaotic. It is hard to believe that he only bought this a month ago, but there was very interesting developments over the last few days. And so we see advertisers are kind of pausing their advertising because they're unsure about content moderation, and they don't want to be associated with content that will be that may be offensive or against Twitter's old terms of use. There are other people who are just astonished. And like you, I have to say, well, every time I log on to Twitter, I see Elon Musk and you think, this man is the richest man in the world and he's the CEO of this company and a few more. I admire the time he has to spend on Twitter, but I don't know how he does it.
Indeed, but I'm just reading through some of the polls that he has held. So last week it was Donald Trump and whether he should be readmitted to Twitter, and the jury spoke and said yes. Today he has won, or 18 hours ago, should Twitter offer a general amnesty to suspended accounts, providing they haven't broken the law or engaged in egregious spam? He's certainly trying to inflame the left.
He is, and he is, and they have, in a sense, inflamed him. The US representative, AOC, as she's known as, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and him have had an incredible, quite spiteful kind of interaction on Twitter over the last couple of weeks. And it kind of grabbed the attention because Elon Musk, in a sense, used to be kind of the darling of the tech industry, which is quite a, you know, Democrat supporting, left leaning industry generally. And now he seems to be perceived as pro-Republican. I think, honestly, I think he is neither. And he has told us a couple of times over the last week that Twitter use is at an all-time high. So whilst it might be a bumpy road, I think he may be on the right one, Will.
Yeah, although we've no way to validate that. It's now a private company. So when he says they've added 1.6 million daily active users, an all-time high in the last week, who knows if he's telling the truth. We'll move on to another big tech story, and one that has been very costly for a lot of people. The decline of crypto, and one exchange in particular, FTX. Tell us more.
So there are probably, the estimate is that in Ireland we have well over 400,000 people who've invested in cryptocurrency in one form or another. And there are a couple of huge crypto exchanges in the world. And, you know, where you go open an account and you can buy and sell your crypto. And the best known ones would be Kraken and another one called Binance. Now, there was another one called FTX, started by a guy called Sam Bankman-Fried, who was very well thought of in the industry. His parents were both law professors at Stanford. He was, you know, a young man in his 20s, and he used to be a trader and working on kind of, you know, Wall Street Bank, started this exchange. And they became incredibly wealthy and they got a lot of investment, hundreds of millions of dollars. Then they set up a subsidiary called Alameda Research, which invested in other people. And everything was going fine, Will. And he was kind of seen as a white knight in the industry until a couple of weeks ago, the owner of one of those exchanges I mentioned, Binance, a guy called CZ, everyone in crypto apparently just uses their initials. And CZ tweeted overnight that Binance were going to sell the tokens that were run by this FTX exchange. And it sounds like a complicated setup, but it's kind of like people withdrawing all their money from a bank. And that's what happened the next day. And then the whole thing imploded. And it turns out that more than a million people are owed billions of dollars and the money isn't there. And last weekend, FTX was hacked and about $400 million in cryptocurrency was stolen. We've gone on to learn that Sam Bankman-Fried lived in the Bahamas. His company had bought quite a number of properties in the Bahamas. He shared an apartment with nine other people, many of whom were in relationships with each other. And regulators have jumped in, and it looks to be the biggest crypto collapse of all time. We don't know whether there was any fraud or mismanagement involved, but I think that it won't be long before we know a lot more. But right now, it has had a direct impact on every element and every part of crypto.
Just looking at the value of Bitcoin today, so at this moment, $16,500. Now, bearing in mind, if you invested at the peak, it was $68,789. That's a phenomenal collapse in value. But of course, you know, if you got in at the beginning, you're still very much in the black.
Yeah, and that was this time last year. In fact, it was at its peak. It's really worrying, Will. And I think what this will lead to is that crypto will be regulated. That exchange that I mentioned, Binance, and that's a very curious, I mean, they're kind of the great big dog of crypto, but I understand that they actually don't have a location. They're kind of, they exist in the ether. So they have no kind of registered country of operation. They're everywhere or nowhere. And regulators aren't going to sit by and watch this. And so there were the investors in FTX were all of the big venture capital firms. And these people will be pressurizing regulators to say, look, this cannot happen again. Our money's gone. We can't go through this again. And crypto will be regulated, which crypto people won't like. But I think the bigger exchanges and the people who operate legitimately will see it as a benefit.
Couple of questions and comments to finish. So one caller says, in the US, for Black Friday, many of the shops give out last year's models. That's why you get a lower price. It's last year's. But then again, you're actually paying less for last year's. Is it really value? It's a year old already. Another person asked, what is considered to be the best gaming PC of the moment? Choice there.
Gaming PCs are an interesting one. They can be really expensive, and people used to love the Alienware products. But most serious gamers, what they tend to do is they tend to go to one of the big PC makers' websites, and you can customize, you can specify your own PC. And that's my advice. You go to one of the big makers, all the names you know, and they have gaming PCs that you can then upgrade the graphics. You can upgrade, get a mechanical keyboard, which is important for gaming, for the response times and all of that. That would be my advice, because if you start with, you know what your budget is, Will, you can, you customize within your budget. That would be my advice.
Yeah, there was a conversation at home not so long ago about Razer Blade laptop. I don't know if that means anything to you, but the answer was very much not on your Nelly. Andy, thanks as always.
Thanks, Will.
Andy O'Donoghue, you can check out his blogs at redcert.com. That brings the programme to a close today, and thank you very much for keeping me company. Sinead Hubble and Chloe Farrell did all the hard work, and we'll be back on your radio tomorrow morning from 9 o'clock.